Welcome to Native America Calling from Studio 49 in Albuquerque. I'm Tara Gatewood. After 14 years in office, U.S. Representative Tom Cole knows a thing or two about getting things done in Washington. Cole is a member of the Chickasaw Nation, and he's one of only two Native Americans in Congress. Today, we'll hear about his political passions and what issues he views as important. We'll also get a take on working with the new president and his hopes for the coming congressional session. Tom Cole is our Native in the Spotlight right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Indigenous women are working on a plan of action to address violence against women, the environment, and health after taking part in the Women's March on Washington over the weekend. A partnership of Native groups organized Indigenous Women Rise as part of the national event.
The march was incredibly powerful.
Rosalie Gonzalez is co-coordinator for the Continental Network of Indigenous Women of the Americas North American Region. She was a convener of Indigenous Women Rise.
For the last month, Indigenous women, several leaders, came together to make sure that our issues, our voices, were present at this national level, at this time of national resistance.
Gonzalez says Native groups, advocates, and individuals want to ensure sovereign rights and tribal issues are a focus of national and international leaders.
We must get organized. We must, you know, also there's an international movement of Indigenous women that has been waiting for Indigenous women across the U.S. to get organized. And this is where we are in this moment of history that we will step forward and do this and call on other Indigenous women and youth to join in this effort.
Gonzalez says a strategy session held after the march includes plans to respond to Trump's first 100 days in office and finding key allies to be part of the administration. Dog musher Pete Kaiser from Bethel again wins a 300-mile race in Alaska. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
His was the team to beat, and no one could. Sunday morning, for the third year in a row, Pete Kaiser won the 2017 Kuskokwim 300 sled dog race, crossing the finish line in Bethel just before 11 a.m. to loud cheers from his hometown crowd. His leader, Palmer, brought home the nine-dog team 28 minutes faster than last year. Kaiser was the first musher to leave the final upriver checkpoint of Tuluksac with a 20-minute edge over last year's runner-up, Brent Sass. At the finish line, Kaiser said the dog team signaled early in the run that they could make it home for the prize.
When we left Tuluksac, the dogs looked really good, and we were on step within a few miles, and I could feel the power in the handlebar, and I kind of knew at that point if we could keep that going, we were going to have a hard time catching us.
A 29-year-old member of the next generation of mushers, Kaiser had 8 K300 finishes to his name. This year, he came into the race with an experienced core team who has raced the past 3 years. In a frigid race with temperatures reaching minus 40, Kaiser had to contend with a series of challenges.
Put a couple extra layers on, and the dogs get coats, and a little extra care. It just makes every task a little bit more difficult. But it was nice to finally have a cold race with snow, and it actually felt like dinner here.
36-year-old Sass, a seasoned Yukon Quest musher based in the interior community of Eureka, was never far behind Kaiser from Kalskag onward. Sass crossed the finish 46 minutes after Kaiser, taking second place to the Kuskokwim champion for the second year in a row.
He's a good dog musher, and these local guys are going to always be tough to beat. But I'm going to keep coming back and try.
Richie Deal of Aniak placed third, his best career finish, and up one place from last year.
The core group, my dogs, just, you know, they're getting a little older and better at it. I could ask for much more, but they're pretty darn good.
In 2015, Kaiser became the first local musher in nearly three decades to win the Kuskokwim 300. Now he matches Mitch Seavey for the second most titles with 3. Only Jeff King, with 9 victories, has more.
That was Anna Rose MacArthur. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Mm. National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. You can count the number of Native Americans serving in Congress on one hand, in fact, in just two fingers. Today we're going to talk to one of them. Congressman Tom Cole represents Oklahoma's 4th District in the United States House of Representatives. He's a member of the Chickasaw Nation and a lifelong Republican. Among other accomplishments, he was instrumental in getting the Violence Against Women Act, or VAWA, reauthorized in 2013. And as he begins his 15th year serving in Congress, we'll talk with him about his views on important issues in Native America and his hopes for working with the Trump administration. And before we bring him in, here are a couple more facts about Representative Cole. He is currently reading the Andrew Roberts book, The Storm War. And that's according to a section of his website called What I'm Reading. And he's also related to Te Ata, the famous Chickasaw performer from the 20th century. We're going to continue to learn more, and we look forward to inviting you into this conversation as well. Anything you want to share, or maybe you have a question for Representative Cole, give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And it's our pleasure to welcome him into the hour. Representative Cole, thank you for being with us today.
Hey, it's a great privilege to be with you.
And Representative Cole, it is definitely an exciting time to take a look at government and where we are with a country and a change in administration. We're glad to know that there is definitely Native representation in Congress. And Representative Cole, I want to start there, just the importance of having a Native person in Congress. What does that mean to you, being one of the two?
Well, it's, first of all, an enormous privilege, obviously, and an enormous responsibility. I remember when I first got to Congress, I'd been here about a month or two, and Ben Nighthorse Campbell, the great Northern Cheyenne United States Senator, called me up, and I was a pretty obscure guy, a freshman. I was up in the fifth floor of Canada, which are the worst office buildings in or offices in Congress, is where they stick all the freshmen. So I was up there, and the call came in. I was surprised, and because he's such a senior and important member. And he got on the phone, and he was a little hesitant. He said, Tom, I don't want to be insulting, but are you Native American? Because I don't obviously look the part. The joke in the family was always, your brother looks like he could lead a Chickasaw war party. You look like you're one of the guys they brought back. And so I said, yes. And he said, so you are a member of a tribe? I said, yes. And you're active? I said, yeah, very active. And the family always has been. My great-great-grandfather was the clerk of the Chickasaw Supreme Court. My great-grandfather was the treasurer. There was Te Ata, who you were kind enough to mention. My mom was the first Native American woman elected to the state Senate in Oklahoma. So I said, we've been very active in tribal affairs and political affairs in the state. And he said, whether you know it or not, you're going to pick up about 2 or 3 million new constituents once people figure that out. And because obviously we don't have a lot of people with the background that are in, and you're going to find people start seeking you out and hoping you can help them with their issues. And I found that indeed to be the case. And so it's been a great privilege because, frankly, it's broadened my knowledge about Native America, so to speak, because there are so many different perspectives given the sheer number of tribal nations that we have and the different historical experiences that they've all gone through. So it's been a great responsibility, but, again, much more of a privilege than a burden.
And Representative, are there any moments where you were either standing in Congress or drafting something or having a conversation or just any of your time there where you know, it really hit home that we do need Native Americans in Congress, our voice matters, and if we weren't there, things wouldn't happen. Is there a moment that you recall where that really got solidified for you?
Several for me, but the vowel would probably be the most important one. I mean, that was one where there was a Democratic Senate bill that had, really restored a really important measure of sovereignty to tribal nations and put us in a position to ultimately be able to do what everybody else can do, which is actually police and protect your own communities and against people that are not part of those communities that come in and do awful things. We have such a high incidence of rape and domestic abuse on Native nations. Many, many cases, the majority of cases, not committed by Native Americans, and we had no means to do it. So the Senate bill passed. The Republican bill did not have that. We negotiated in good faith. We improved the bill quite a bit, but it still wasn't as good as, frankly, what was in the Senate bill. And so, I let my leadership know that if they couldn't fix it, and Representative Issa and I had an amendment that would have done that, and they didn't allow that on the floor, that we would bring down the Republican bill and pass the Democratic bill and send that to the president, which is precisely what we do. Now, I must say, they were cooperative in this. They understood. But, if I hadn't been there, we would either not have violence against women reauthorized, or it certainly wouldn't contain the Native American provisions that it has. So something like that, or the Cobell decision. I got a call from President Obama immediately afterwards that I spoke on the floor in favor of that and to help get the Republican votes that were necessary to get that very large settlement through. I remember Louise Cobell, late Louise Cobell, came by to visit with me on a number of occasions as we worked on that. That was a great privilege. So when things like that occur and you can see where you tangibly make a difference, or you know you can impact thousands, perhaps millions of lives and things like Native health care by pushing up the appropriations and working through some of those knotty problems. I mean, those are supremely, terrific experiences. And so I've had a number of those. You get some down times, too. But again, quite a few times when I think, gosh, I've been able to make a difference because I've been able to educate my colleagues a little bit about an experience that many of them don't know much about. If they don't, they're not privileged to represent large Native populations, and in many cases, they come here with very little understanding of Native history and very little understanding of our very unique status as sovereign nations within a sovereign nation that's recognized in the Constitution.
And that's really important. And folks, what do you think about that? 1-800-996-2848. And Representative Cole, it's great to hear this side of, you know, what it means to be in Congress. At the top of the hour, we mentioned you were instrumental, and it's great to hear more details on your involvement with the Violence Against Women Act, especially providing protection for Native communities. And we heard during the confirmation sessions, we heard the Violence Against Women Act brought up. And a lot of people, advocates who have fought for this, were a little shaken up when they heard that possibly these provisions are being looked at. We had Sarah Deer on with us, and, you know, she made her thoughts on this of, you know, what happens if this were to move and that protection goes away? Representative, is there any thoughts on that, on some of the talk in Congress or some of the talk that we've heard connected to VAWA and keeping our Native communities safe?
I frankly don't worry about it being repealed. I worry more about it not getting the funding that we need in terms of developing the law enforcement and judicial capacity that are required to actually implement this. And we've got a number of tribes that are working very diligently now on doing that, but there's still a dearth of resources. I think there's actually support for the concept on both sides of the aisle. And, to me, this is really very simple. I actually don't tend to look at Native issues as Republican or Democrat. I think it's actually not a partisan issue, but it's good that we have strong support on both sides of the aisle. Again, we wouldn't have the vowel positions because it had to move through a Republican House and a Democratic Senate if there hadn't have been a lot of bipartisanship in both bodies, particularly in the House on that particular occasion, to make sure that it happened. And I know the Republicans that worked with me and others, certainly didn't do it alone. Like a Darrell Issa in California, would fiercely oppose any effort to water down or repeal. So I don't think the votes are there, and I certainly haven't heard anything out of the administration that would suggest it. Quite the opposite. If you look at a couple of the appointments, Ryan Zinke at Interior in particular, that's a really excellent appointment from a Native standpoint. He's not Native himself, but he's been a really strong advocate for tribes, and your Montana tribes will certainly know him well. He's been in my office on several occasions to work on behalf of the Crow or to have a question. He's been working hard to get a particular group out there recognized. So he's both knowledgeable and sympathetic and very supportive of tribal sovereignty. So again, I think we're going to have some good allies.
And, one thing that really piqued my ears is the confirmation hearing of Senator Jeff Sessions, where they were talking specifically about this. And something that really piqued my interest was taking a look at tribal courts presiding over non-natives. And it sounded like it was a challenge. And a lot of people are talking about tribal courts. And I know you said earlier it's really important to have native voices there in Congress because it talks about understanding. Representative Cole, any thoughts on that about a challenge to tribal courts and whether they're worthy enough to try non-natives?
Well, they certainly are worthy enough. Now, again, you have to establish standards and you have to recognize that it takes time and investment. And some tribes have the ability to do that. The Paskayakis are certainly working toward that end, and others don't. But there's a federal obligation to provide that. And so it'll take a while to get there. But this is a bogus argument that somehow non-natives are going to be treated poorly in native courts. If I go to the state of Alabama and I commit a crime, I'm going to be tried by Alabamans, even though I'm an Oklahoman. And if there's some violation of my federal rights or my rights as an American, I have the right to appeal in the federal court. That's true with Native American courts, too. And the Indian Civil Rights Act of 1965 makes that very apparent. If you were to go to a tribal court, I have no reason to believe that you would not be treated fairly. But if you were, if some transgression occurred, you can appeal immediately to federal court. So, all the mechanisms are in place that protect Americans any place that they're put on trial in Indian country. So this idea that somehow you're lesser, and when that argument's raised, I always think about, I remember a particular senator making that point during the course of the debate. It was frustrating to me because he said, well, gosh, then there'll be a non-native tried by a lot of Indians. That doesn't fair. Well, how many times are Indians tried by a lot of people that are not native? I mean, that happens sometimes. If you get in a scrape with the law in an area where your particular race or ethnicity is not well represented, our legal system exists to make sure that your rights are protected under all circumstances. Now, I'm not naive enough to tell you that there's never mistakes or there's never miscarriages. There are. But the system works by and large well, and to deny Indians the right to police and protect their own communities, particularly when the federal government has done such a poor job of this. Prosecutors are a long way away. U.S. attorneys are busy doing other things. You don't have the federal law enforcement investment in a lot of communities that you need. So there's all kinds of problems, but the best way to solve that problem is to empower Native peoples in their own communities to provide justice. They're not going to do it unfairly.
That's great. And it's interesting just hearing, some of the response from Senator Sessions of talking about more of this needs to go into the federal courts. And I think you just explained why it is important that tribal courts are given, the weight that they deserve and maybe not deserve, but, as a part of a sovereign right. We are talking today with Representative Tom Cole. He represents Oklahoma's 4th District in the United States House of Representatives. We are glad to have him here with us on the line. And we're also inviting you into the conversation, too. If there's anything you'd like to ask Representative Cole, give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. And when we say we are talking to one of the two representatives in Congress who have Native American roots, what do you think about that? 1-800-996-2848. And if you're just learning about how many representatives are in Congress, you can talk about that too. Is this exciting news? Is this something you wanted to hear on a Monday? 1-800-996-2848. You can also send us your questions or thoughts on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And with that, Representative Cole, we do have a comment coming from Twitter. Andy Rose asked, how will the U.S. government assure access to clean water for rural communities and everywhere else? That's what Andy's wondering about. Representative Cole, any thoughts?
Yes. Actually, we need to make more investment in infrastructure. Now, a lot of this is sometimes done locally and by states, obviously, particularly locally, that is normally. But there are occasions. The EPA has an important role in this. So we have a revolving fund that helps particularly rural and smaller and in many cases economically deprived communities. And sadly, a lot of that, a lot of Native America fits into that, Indian country. So there are mechanisms to do that, and we do it. We probably, hopefully, need to do more of it. It'll be interesting to see if the new president proposes sweeping infrastructure investments, how much of that will be earmarked toward water, and particularly what mechanisms will be there to make sure that this money is fairly distributed and we get an equitable amount of that investment in Indian country, because water issues are tremendous issues for a lot of our communities, particularly some of the reservation communities.
All right. Thank you for that. And Representative Cole, let's talk a little bit more about the new administration. And one of the big buzzes in Native America is talking about the former administration reaching out to Native Americans and wondering, what will this next administration mean? What does the new president think of our Native nations? And any thoughts you have about President Trump and his understanding of our Native nations? Any thoughts?
Yeah, a number of things. But first, I want to echo your point. I'm a very conservative Republican, and there's a lot of issues that I disagreed with President Obama on. This was not one of them. He did an excellent, excellent job in Native American issues. And that was a good partnership, by the way. Most people don't recognize that the Republican House actually for 5 years in a row voted more money for Indian health care than President Obama even asked for, though the president, again, is very good on these issues. So, again, there's a good chance to work across the aisle. Where Trump is concerned, he's more of a mystery to me, although to be fair, so was President Obama when he came in. I don't think he came in with a lot of background in these areas, but he learned a lot during the course of his campaign, and he put around him some really terrific people, people like Jody Gillette, for instance, who was an excellent, excellent advisor to him on Native American issues, got involved in his campaign. In Trump's case, I'm pleased that one of the first things that he did, I guess I should say President Trump now, it was a listening session with Native Americans here in Washington, D.C., where they had my colleague and fellow Native American, Cherokee, Mark Wade Mullen, actually chaired it, did an excellent job. We kept having to get a bigger room because more and more tribes, and these were most of them officials with tribes, came. There were 240 or 50 people that offered a variety of suggestions there. So that, I think that is a good sign that they both did it and that there was good representation from the transition team. I look at Ryan Zinke's appointment, and I couldn't be more pleased from a Native standpoint. I think he will really be an excellent Secretary of the Interior. He is knowledgeable about Indian issues. He understands the importance of tribal sovereignty. We'll wait and see, obviously, who ends up at the BIA. There's lots of speculation, I think, too, in the Trump White House. There'll be an advisor for Native American Affairs. I think I know who that person is, but I probably shouldn't announce it until the president has, because I can't get ahead of him. But if it's the person I'm told, I think people will be very pleased. A very fine individual, well-known in Indian country, and having that kind of voice in the White House would be terrific. So the opening moves have been favorable. You know, one of the things that I think we have to do, and I think tribes have done a really good job of this over the last 10 or 15 years, is really educate, successive administrations, educate your members, tribal involvement, literally going to see your congressman, making sure the congressman comes to your community or United States Senator is much better now than it was when I was elected in 2002, and it's made a big difference. So I think continuing to do that is very important, but again, the opening signs are good, but if they're not, if for some reason the train will go off the track, and that happens occasionally, well then we've got a lot of friends, I think, on both sides of the aisle in Congress that will be quick to rise in defense of Indian country.
All right. Thank you for that. And, you know, a lot of it, it's exciting to see how the transition will incorporate Native communities or Native representatives into their administration. And, you know, when we look at this new start with a new presidency, I think there's a lot to discuss. And that's why it's great to have you with us, Representative Cole, somebody who will be in Congress, seeing some of the dialogue, as well as, I think, learning and coming back to our Native communities and making us stronger that way. We're glad you're with us. And folks, we want you to be with us too. All you got to do is give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Let's take a call. We're going to say hi to Stephen in Bethel, Alaska, tuned in on KYUK.
Good morning.
And good morning to you, Stephen. Go ahead. You're on air.
Thank you. The question I have would be, I moved to Alaska from the lower 48th. And the courts there have minimum sentencing guidelines. With the tribal courts requesting or really wanting to be the more involved with the sentencing process of natives, when you have repeat offenders, like I've seen in my short stint here in Alaska, how will that be handled? If there's because what I've been able to see, it's pretty much kind of a slap on the wrist policy. And if they go and commit that same crime in another state, in another jurisdiction, and they have to appear in your traditional court, a U.S. court.
Okay, Stephen, got to go to break here, but I think I understand what you're wondering about. We'll give Representative Cole a moment to chat with you. But as we think about this, further and what it means for our communities, I know there's a lot of people out there who have thoughts on this. You can give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we look forward to your questions as well. Looking forward to hear from Representative Cole and more thoughts on our tribal courts. And I guess we're also talking tribal justice systems and how it fits in with the rest of the world. We do appreciate your call, Stephen. Hang tight. We're going to go to break here, but our phone lines will stay open. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And if you'd like to join us, well, we'd like to have you. These phone lines are here for you. Make them ring. 1-800-996-2848 and 1-800-99-NATIVE is our Twitter handle. If you can't get to the phone, send us a tweet. We'll take a look at those and weave in as much as we can as we continue with our second half here in just a moment. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recently found that kidney failure among Native Americans dropped more than 54% over a 17-year period. This drop is attributed to following the basic rules of good kidney health care. We'll talk with experts about the best ways to keep our kidneys healthy on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Utah Dene Bekea. President Obama has heard Native American voices, and we thank him for proclaiming Bears Ears a national monument. The Bears Ears Living Cultural Landscape protects our ancestors' lands and provides collaborative management with tribes to ensure our people will continue to hunt, collect firewood and herbs, and hold ceremonies. Thank you, President Obama, for standing with tribes and fellow Americans to make Bears Ears National Monument a place where Native prayers are alive. Learn more at protectbearsears.org. Support by VisionMaker Media, whose mission is to empower and engage Native people to tell stories. VisionMaker Media is currently pleased to offer public media internships. You can find out more at visionmakermedia.org. Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and thanks for joining us. And if you have any suggestions for show topics, send us an email to comments@nativeamericacalling.com. Our Native in the Spotlight is Representative Tom Cole. He's from Oklahoma. He's been in the U.S. House of Representatives since 2002, and he is a proud member of the Chickasaw Nation. And if you got a question or comment for him, give us a call. The number is 1-800-99-NATIVE. That's also 1-800-996-2848. And he is on the line with us today. Representative Cole, welcome back to the hour.
Good to be with you.
Thanks. And we had a caller before the break, Stephen in Bethel, wanting to know more. Any thoughts about taking a look at repeat offenders when it comes to tribal provisions, and just any thoughts? Go ahead, Representative.
Stephen makes a very good point, and some of these things are being worked through. Under VAWA, as I recall, and please forgive me, I'm not an attorney, but the top sentence we could impose in a tribal court for domestic violence or assault cases, 3 years of incarceration. To do that, you've got to have a facility to be able to do it. You have to have, obviously, a judicial process that could stand scrutiny in case the issue's appealed. And there are provisions to speed these things up where those things don't exist and move them into the federal courts a little bit faster. But if you've got a repeat offender, probably you could still do the charge, but you might want to move to a federal court. And frankly, the accused has the right to ask for a federal court. I think they'll be less inclined to do that because the federal courts actually could put more severe penalties on you than a tribal court. So while we have a measure of sovereignty under VAWA, it's not complete. And that's partly, to be fair, an experimental time, and partly to give tribes an opportunity to build justice systems that could reach verdicts that would not be quickly overturned because of a problem in the evidence chain or a process problem by a federal court. Because, again, like every American in any court, if I were to commit a crime in the state of Oklahoma, I do quite often have grounds for federal appeal, particularly if there's a process that's seen to violate my constitutional rights as an American citizen.
All right. Thank you for that, Stephen. Thank you for your question there in Bethel, Alaska. And if you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848. We got another caller on the line. We're going to say hi to Kathy in Tecotena. I'm not sure how you say that. Kathy, where are you at today listening on KSKO?
I live in Tecotena, Alaska.
All right. Tecotena. Thanks for that. And Kathy, I understand you got a question.
Yes. Thank you. First, I'd just like to say I think it is disgraceful that the Supreme Court has been left vacant for a year now because the Republicans refuse to do their job and even hold confirmation hearings. Merrick Garland was a good candidate that deserved a hearing. I'd also like to say, that the Women's March over the weekend was incredible. And a lot of the issues for that march kind of hinge on this filling of this vacancy. So I'd like to ask Representative Cole, since you refused to do your job as a Republican, to even hold a confirmation hearing, what now?
Okay, Kathy, I'm not sure what you're referring to on him not doing his job. Let me give him a moment to talk as well. Representative Cole, any thoughts?
Well, First, I didn't refuse to do my job because I'm not a member of the United States Senate, and so I don't have any role in the confirmation process in the House of Representatives. But I will disagree with the caller in the sense that there's no constitutional obligation to take up a nomination. There's no specific timeline laid out. And it's very unusual, frankly, in the final year of an administration when you literally would turn the direction of the court over for any president to try and do that. You note, again, while, and frankly, had the roles been reversed, I have no doubt the Democrats would have done the same thing. What Mitch McConnell said was, we will let the American people effectively have a vote on this by picking the president in the next election, and then we'll pick up that person regardless of who won. So, again, I think he was pretty consistent, and I think it's gotten pretty contentious between the parties. Democrats took away the filibuster right for everything but the Supreme Court when they had the majority. So, again, I'm not surprised what sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander, and so to speak, in this regard. I'm sorry it's gotten that way in the United States Supreme Court, but it has. And you know, again, there'll be an opportunity. We'll see what Democrats do with the tables reversed a little bit. But again, it's not on my daily mind because I don't sit in the United States Senate.
And with that, Representative Cole, when we think about the Supreme Court nomination, there's a lot that's connected to our Native nations, and we know there's a lot of work being done on the tribal level to understand how just Supreme Court decisions affect us, either as citizens of the United States or direct cases that have gone there. So whom gets into the Supreme Court is really important. And any thoughts about just this function and how it does connect to our Native nations?
I wish we had, frankly, a Native American or somebody that really thought about these issues as deeply as I think you should in the United States Senate, because I've never heard a question placed to a potential justice in the hearings by either side of the aisle. What's your view of tribal sovereignty? You know, what's the role of tribal governments in the American system, so to speak? So I'd like that explored a lot more deeply. We've gotten some really bad decisions out of the Supreme Court. We go through periods of time where the Supreme Court can be very supportive, and then it changes. The one that I think of the most in recent years is the so-called Carcieri decision, which involved the Narragansett and the state of Rhode Island. And basically, the Supreme Court said, hey, the federal government can only put land into trust for you if you, as a tribe, were specifically mentioned in the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934. Well, lots of tribes weren't part of that. I mean, the Narragansetts themselves were not a federally recognized tribe, although they have treaties with the state of Rhode Island back to when it was a colony of Rhode Island in the British Empire. So this really created effectively two different classes of Indian tribes, some that the federal government could put land in trust for, others that it couldn't. And now we have lots of tribes that either were recognized after 1934, or just simply weren't included in the 34 Act, even though they were clearly functioning tribal governments, that own land into trust. And you see states and localities trying to exercise jurisdiction and collect taxes where they have no right to do so. So it was a terrible Supreme Court decision. It ought to be reversed. And to be fair to the Supreme Court, in the opinion itself, they actually mentioned Congress could rectify this. I've got legislation to do that. So does my friend Representative McCollum, who co-chairs the Native American Caucus, a Democrat from Minnesota, just a terrific, terrific person and a strong advocate for Native rights. We've not been able to move our legislation, either her bill or mine. I'm disappointed in that, but we're going to keep trying, and we seem to have picked up support, certainly in the United States Senate. So there's another example where the Department of Labor took jurisdiction over tribes in the National Labor Relations Act. They have no jurisdiction there. If you read the legislation, they're supposed to focus on private employment. The tribal government is just like working for a state government or a federal government. That's a government job, and it's under the jurisdiction of the tribes, not the National Labor Relations Board. That's one where we actually passed legislation to take that away from them through the House. The Senate was close to getting it passed. It just ran out of time. So I think hopefully that will happen. If that does, I think probably President Trump would sign something like that. So we have to be really, really forceful in pushing back on both bad court decisions, which Carcieri was a bad Supreme Court decision that undercut tribal sovereignty and rights and unleashed a lot of litigation that shouldn't be going on. It's very expensive to tribes. Or to, you know, when agencies take powers over tribal land or over tribes, that they don't, that it isn't in statute. And that's exactly what the Department of Labor, in my view, did when it, after 60 years of not bothering to try and insert itself in tribal affairs, decided in 2004 that it was going to exercise jurisdiction when there was no statutory justification and no call for Congress for them to do so. So, you know, again, you have to defend yourself on many fronts. You have to not be afraid to negotiate, but also to litigate and obviously push back politically.
Certainly. And we look forward to taking a look at this even more in depth as, you know, we hear the next Supreme Court nomination getting in. You know, we're looking forward to that discussion. I think you laid some good footwork for us. And Representative Cole, our caller also just wanted to get your thoughts on what people witnessed this weekend with the Women's March. Any thoughts?
You know, there's a lot of... it's really funny. A lot of people, of course, didn't like Trump's inauguration or this or that, and then a lot of people that were Trump people didn't like, you know, the Women's March. Look, this is America. That's what this country's all about, is open dissent, the free exchange of ideas, the ability of people to argue, petition your government. I couldn't think of a much better way to begin again, as we do every 4 years, than have competing viewpoints on the Mall in Washington, D.C., one on Friday and a different one on Saturday. That's your right as an American, and hundreds of thousands of Americans have fought and died to give us that that freedom. So whether I agree with every point that's made, either on Friday or Saturday, is really immaterial. I celebrate the fact that people felt free to do it, and that once it was done, they'll go home. There's no consequences. They don't have to worry about a knock on the door in the night. They're not going to disappear into some gulag. They're not going to lose their job, because we don't allow things like that to happen here. So I thought it was a splendid display of American democracy at its finest.
All right. Thank you for that. And Kathy, thank you for your call there in Tocotna. Folks, you can join us too, 1-800-996-2848. Another big one that people have their eyes on, Representative Cole, is the Affordable Care Act. We've heard some dialogue about this. But of course, here on the program, we are really concerned with Native America's connection to it. And any thoughts? I understand you're in favor of repealing ACA. Any thoughts about what will happen with the provisions in the Indian Health Care Improvement Act if ACA is repealed? Go ahead. Give us your thoughts.
Thank you. Sorry, I didn't mean to. I was just so eager to plunge in. I actually have and have had for several years on the chance that the ACA might, the Affordable Care Act might be repealed, a freestanding legislation that would keep the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, which is part of that legislation. Now, if you know the history of it, the Indian Health Care Improvement Act was moving along as a separate bill with over 300 co-sponsors. It really didn't have anything to do with the Affordable Care Act. It was a separate reauthorization and a very good piece, an important piece of legislation, had strong bipartisan support. When the Affordable Care Act was written, the Democrats, quite frankly, decided, the Speaker Pelosi, to combine it combine the Indian Care Health Act with the ACA. Part of that was convenience. You're just moving one big piece of legislation through. Part of it, frankly, in my view, was to put pressure on Democrats who represented areas with strong Native populations to vote for the ACA, even if they had doubts. And a lot of Democrats in places like North and South Dakota or Oklahoma, we had a Democratic member then, were in favor of the Indian Health Care Improvement Act and were indeed co-sponsors, but were not in favor of the Affordable Care Act, and nor were their constituents. So, you know, in that sense, that act, which should have passed in a bipartisan sense on its own because the votes were there, was, I think, commandeered to try and get votes for the ACA. So as we unwind this, and I've made this point to Speaker Ryan, to the Republican Conference, and frankly to our new, assuming he gets approved, Congressman Tom Price, who's been nominated for Health and Human Services. You know, that's where the Indian Health Service fits into that department, made the point that this legislation needs to be passed separately, and we'll be working to that end. And so I'm pretty comfortable that will occur. It's not as if all the ACA is being repealed, for instance. Republicans will quite often talk about wanting to keep the ability of families to keep children on their parents' insurance until they're 26, and so several other things in there that they like as opposed to the things they don't. So I think the same thing will happen with the Indian Health Care Improvement Act, that it will survive. And I know on the committee where a lot of this will be done, Energy and Commerce, I'm not a member of that committee, but Mark Wayne Mullen, again, my colleague and Cherokee, is, and he's been tasked to make sure that as we move, we don't undo the things in the Indian Health Care Act. We want you to master this and work with work with the tribes and make sure that the health care structure that's there does not in any way undo the Indian Health Care Improvement Act. So I think a message has been sent, and we're going to continue to work and try to make sure that framework, which is good bipartisan one, stays in place.
And any thoughts on the Medicaid expansion? Do you support going away? Any thoughts?
It depends on what we replace it with. Look, again, what the president has said is we're going to make sure that people that have care now are able to keep it. So we'll wait and see how they do that. Again, I don't sit on that legislation. And frankly, in my own state, we don't have Medicaid expansion. You know, that's a very uneven system. The states had to adopt it, so Oklahoma chose not to. I think there's 19 different states where that doesn't exist. So it's not as if it's uniform across the country. What we probably need is a system that gives states some flexibility and doesn't force them to do things that, again, 19 states have decided rather than participate in this, we're going to forego it. And that meant in those states, their citizens didn't get the benefit of Medicare expansion.
All right. Thank you for that. And I got another caller who'd like to chat with you. Let's go ahead and bring him in. We're going to say hi to a caller in Wilpinit, Washington, tuned in on KSFC. And I look forward to bringing him into the conversation. Caller, you're on air.
Thank you. I've been listening to the program this morning. And what I was wondering, I've been seeing on social media that President Trump is now thinking about making a lot of the Indian land public land so they can extract natural resources from Native American lands. And I was just wondering how this application would go forth.
Okay, and looks like it's Bill who's in Wilpinit. Thanks for your call. Representative, go ahead.
Bill, I don't think that's the case. I think there's been some misunderstanding here. As I've been told, the idea is to give tribes control over their land and let them make the decisions on what sorts of mineral development occurs there. And that's the appropriate thing to do. This isn't federal land, as I know you know. This is Indian land that the federal government holds in trust. But we do not own it as a federal government. And it's not the land of all the peoples. You know, Navajo land is Navajo land. It's not owned and should not be controlled. The decisions that are made there should not be made by, you know, people that are not part of that community. We've had, the federal government has been used in many cases, has blocked development on Indian land as if it were federal parkland or controlled by the Bureau of Land Management, because we don't in many cases have a regulatory framework set up. I'm a strong believer in letting tribes make these decisions as to whether and how they want to exploit the mineral resources that they have. But it should be done by the tribal governments in those communities. It's certainly not the right of non-natives to go onto native land and develop the resources. And I don't think that's what the Trump administration intends. I think what they want to do is free tribes from federal regulation and let them make their own decisions.
All right. Thank you, Bill, for reaching out. And folks, there's a couple of minutes left in the hour today. Congressman Tom Cole from the Chickasaw Nation is our native in the spotlight. If you'd like to chat with him, give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Representative Cole, we know you're going to be doing a lot of work as things continue to pick up and we get deeper into this year. Social Security reform, I understand, is an important issue for you. Anything you want to share about that and some of the work that you're looking forward to doing?
Well, we'd love to do Social Security reform. Unfortunately, the new administration said no, not right now, and so is the most of the members in Congress. But the Social Security, which most Americans rely on in their senior years, you know, is going bankrupt. It's not imminent. It's not going to happen today or tomorrow, but we're working our way through the trust fund just simply because more and more people are turning 65 as the baby boomer generation retires, and they're living a lot longer. And as I always say, now that I'm 67, I think that's a very good thing. But we need to fix this system. And a Democratic colleague and I, John Delaney, have gone back and looked at what happened the last time we fixed it. It was bipartisan. It was done when President Reagan was there. It was really a deal between him and Tip O'Neill, who was the Speaker of the House, and Howard Baker, who was head of the Senate. And they set up a commission. The commission looked at what needed to be done. They gradually raised the age. I mean, I wouldn't be able to collect a full check until I was 66. My father at 65. My now 34-year-old son would have to wait till he's 67. But they also slightly raised the tax, and they raised the ceiling of the amount of income that could be taxed. There's a variety of ways to do this. They're not very complicated. It's really a simple math problem, but the politics of it are supercharged. But it's something we need to do. I don't want to dismantle or fundamentally change Social Security, but we need to make the adjustments that demography demands, just because, again, people are living a lot longer, and there's a lot more of them. The Social Security population will double the number of people on it over the next 25 years or so. And so let's make the adjustments now. It's a lot less painful if you do it gradually at the beginning than it is if you wait around until there's a crisis.
And speaking of the new session of Congress, any thoughts, your top priorities or things you're looking forward to bringing to the floor or either bringing more dialogue to?
Well, we're going to continue to push hard on carceri. We have a range of Indian issues. We also want to continue the progress we've made. On the Interior Appropriations Committee. Ken Calvert from California chairs that committee, but it's Betty McCollum, again, my partner, is on the Native American Coalition or caucus. We've been able to gradually increase funding every year, really, for Indian health. That needs to continue. We still have a lot of catch up to do. We've started to move more money into the Bureau of Indian Education, both for infrastructure. We need to make major changes there. So we have a range of issues there. And then I've got other legislation supporting me in other areas. But in Native American areas, the focus on appropriations and carceri would probably be the two biggest things that I look at.
And Representative Cole, we started off with talking about Natives in Congress. And as we said, you know, you can count them on the hand, actually, two fingers. Any thoughts? Do you look forward to the day when there's just more than two?
Yes. When I first got here, there were actually three. Gosh, we had two House members, Carson, that represented the same area that Mark Wayne Mullen does in eastern Oklahoma. And, of course, we had, great Northern Cheyenne senator here as well. And we got down to one. Now we're back at two. But we need more Natives running. And we need them involved and active, even if you're not a member. I think you can build a relationship with one, or you can do what my friend Jody Gillette did and play a key role in a presidential campaign. And all of a sudden, we had somebody that grew up on Standing Rock, inside the White House, advising the President of the United States. Now, that's a pretty responsible position, and one where she did a great deal of good. And again, we've got Orvette Rubido, when she was head of Indian Health Service, did a tremendous job for us because she understood the issues. So involvement and focus on these issues, I think, is extraordinarily important. And we need it on both sides of the aisle. I think it would be a big mistake. I always tell I don't believe in Republican tribes and Democratic tribes. I want every tribe to have strong Democrats and strong Republicans, because anything that's ever going to happen on Native American issues almost is always bipartisan. It always requires votes on both sides. So when we operate that way, and we get a lot of stuff done, like VAWA, like the Cobell decision, like the Tribal Law and Order Bill, like the increased appropriations. All those things have happened in the last few years. All of them have been done on a bipartisan basis, and all of them have been done with active involvement by tribal communities, educating the larger American polity, if you will, and advocating their case. And if we continue to do that, I think we'll continue to be successful, regardless of who the President of the United States is.
And Congressman Cole, is there any contact information if folks want to follow up with you? Where do they find you?
Sure. You can find us on the web, obviously, but we're here in Washington, D.C. The telephone number is 202-225-6165. Or you can just go to the House website, punch in my name, and it'll pop up. We have our own website, but we're pretty easy to get in touch with, and we would welcome the contact and the communication. We do work with tribes, not just from my district or from the state of Oklahoma, but honestly all across the country, because the issues have a great deal in common. And if tribal sovereignty is diminished anywhere, it's diminished everywhere. So we care what happens in Alaska or in Washington or in Alabama or what have you. Wherever there's Native Americans and the Native American tribal entity, we've got deep concerns and deep connections and try to work with them.
All right. Well, we wish you the best. Thank you for spending your day with us, Congressman Tom Cole. And folks, if you'd like to revisit the conversation, you can find an archive of it on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. And we're back again tomorrow with a show about keeping your kidneys healthy. And we do appreciate you tuning in and look forward to you doing it again tomorrow and other days. Thanks to the Native America Calling crew, our executive producer, Art Hughes, senior producer, Monica Brain, associate producer, Andy Murphy, engineer, Derek Toledo. Also thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. It has been a pleasure to start off another week with you. We look forward to the conversations ahead of us and hearing your voice right alongside. Thanks, and we're back tomorrow.
Buju, Nigan and Nabin, Gawin Gada opime a tusin wa du deman, Gada bojitun mazana igas, jidaba igasiwan anishina bewian, Dangigwanain again, Ganoj 1-800-318-2596, Gema Mawedishiwain, healthcare.gov, Gaund in Nagadeg, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Miigwech.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes, including Native America Calling. Just pick, click, give, and select KNBA-FM Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Support by the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department, providing complete convention and visitors planning services to Native American conventions. Information on convention and tourism services at siabq.org.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.